Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Jeremy White.
You don't necessarily need irons to play golf. I'm just going to hit driver and bump three woods in the fairway and then putt.
And Joe DiBiase.
Anyone, I've got a buddy who hits a golf ball like 300 yards, but it goes everywhere.
Well, of course I know it. It's me.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on Western New York Sports Giant, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Sometimes
sounds good.
When I hear Jeremy talk about golf, I laugh because he's not being funny about that. Like, I can imagine him really going for a strategy like that. But that's what makes, if you've ever played, if you ever got the chance to play golf with Jeremy White, he's a vibe when he plays. First of all, he's always going to dress well. And he's going to hit the ball pretty far. And then he doesn't really know where any of the other clubs are going to go, which is why he's talking about not ever really playing with irons because, you know, I mean, we're amateurs. I've played with Jeremy before, and I think I've shot Bill's Media Golf Tournament a couple years ago. I'm a pretty good player. I'm a low single-digit handicap. I think he shot like 100. It was also 100 degrees outside, so I like to give myself... I also talked a lot of junk before that.
There it is.
Talked a lot of junk, and I did not quite back it up.
Well, first of all, good. You got to have the confidence.
I don't like that. Good morning.
Don't we know it?
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us this morning. We've got a absolutely loaded slate. Nate Geary, Derek Kramer, once again sitting in for Jeremy and Joe. Hopefully, we'll have Joe back tomorrow, maybe, if he's feeling better. You know, he's been kind of fighting some kind of cold. What maybe is the same thing I've been fighting the last couple of days. But you know, I'm hydrating, staying. You know, as hydrated as I possibly can to keep the voice strong today. We've got, as I mentioned, a very, very loaded slate. Joe Marino, his weekly appearance here at 7:30 a.m. Coming up in a little while. Lindy Ruff is going to join us. They were supposed to join us yesterday, so they moved to today. So Coach Lindy Ruff will join with us at 8 a.m. this morning. Sal at 8:30. And then Nolan Bianchi from the Detroit News is going to join us at 9 o'clock. We're going to talk some Lions. It's Lions week, and I feel like yesterday we talked a whole bunch of hockey. The Sabres do play tonight as well. An oddly important game for December 11th of the season, considering A, the 7-game losing streak the Sabres are on, and B, the team that is, what, immediately above them in the standings, 4 points out, 4 points ahead of the Sabres.
New York's 3. They did hold on to the last playoff spot until last night. Philadelphia has it at 4 points out now.
Okay, so they're 4 points out of a playoff spot, 3 points behind the Rangers. So this is, frankly, this could end up being a 4-point swing in a game like this where, you know, you go from being, you know, four games potential with a win, one game behind the Rangers, two games behind the wild card spot, to six games behind the wild card spot and five games behind the Rangers in with a regulation loss today. So obviously a big night for the Sabres. We'll talk a little bit about that with Lindy Ruff at 8 o'clock. We'll get an update on Rasmus Dahlin, who's still, I believe, on the IR, and it could potentially be activated for the weekend game, but we'll get an update on that. Matias Samuelsson back skating. We'll see if he's going to be in the lineup tonight. Tyson Kozak got loaned back to Rochester after Monday night's game, so we'll see what the plan moving forward with Kozak, who I thought in a couple of games, in a short game stint, played really well for the Sabres, really got that fourth line's energy going again with, you know, Nicholas Aubé-Cabell and Beck Mellestein. So we'll see what the plan for Tyson Kozak moving forward is, if that was just a kind of a short stint. And if it was just a short stint, it was an impressive one.
Yeah, I liked what Kozak brought. And I think that offensively, he gave a little bit more to the fourth line for what he was bringing from Rochester to here. And I was sad to see him go. I honestly would have thought you could wave like a Sam Lafferty, for example, send him to the minors and totally get away with it, because he's on a two-year deal, and teams typically don't claim that through waivers for a fourth-line player. So I would have thought that would have been a nice thing to keep him around, but I understand why. Two-way contracts, he's one of only a few players that can be moved around freely.
That flexibility will help the Sabres, but not necessarily be a reason for Kozak to be
his presence,
you know, kind
will
of
be missed on the
lineup.
Short term, though.
I agree.
To be said.
It's tough because, you know, like where the roster is right now, getting Samuelsson back, if he's activated off of the IR, you know, we'll kind of see what happens over here the next maybe couple of hours to give us a hint at what we're kind of going to see game time, at least for the roster. You know, obviously yesterday was, I would say, I've had days like yesterday on the station before, whether it's filling in on a, you know, afternoon show or this show or, you know, Sports Talk Saturday, which I know you know more than anybody at this point. But I guess the thing that I think stood out to me yesterday is this might, I don't know, maybe I'm just reacting in the moment and the recency bias of this, but it feels like fans have gotten to this place that they're at right now, I don't know, probably 7, 8, 10 of the last 13 years, right?
Look at last year even.
But I feel like this sort of attitude, this sort of anger, resentment of the team, I mean, maybe waited until the new year. Like, you know, you knew going at this point last year, you were waiting for Jack Quinn to come back from his injury.
Last year, though, it was a similar timeline.
It was.
Because they got the bricks beat off of them against Columbus at home. And
yes,
then the fans booed throughout that one. But also the Seattle game before that, which was the one that, like, apparently had upset the players. Because they were a little too trigger happy on that one. Like, they were only down like 2-0 or something, or like 2-1. It was not a big deal, and they still managed to get booed off the ice after a period, and it's like, all right, calm down. But then they get smacked around against Columbus, lose 7-3 at home, and Kyle Okposo mentions the drought, like, you know, mentioning that the fan, like, this team is not responsible for the entirety of it, which is true. The Sabres responded immediately. Toronto comes to town, and they put them down literally the same score, 7-3, at home. So hopefully tonight, with more of that frustration being there, we could see an appropriate response, cut the playoff chase down to half, and you're suddenly 2 points out, despite everything that has happened to them. Because you look at the 8-game losing streak from the 2022 season, they got 0 points out of that 8-game losing streak.
Right,
even here,
I tried to mention that as kind of a low-key positive.
Yes. There's, like, yeah, it's out of 14 total points, but you did manage to sneak three in there, one of which you had to earn against Vancouver. The other two, you kind of goofed it a little bit, but you still managed to get that point. Like the Detroit one, you should have had to. But
yeah, they should have won in regulation. I mean, they gave Detroit an opportunity at a free point, and then they didn't close it out. And you know, obviously the McLeod post was a was disappointing, and the Zucker post was disappointing in that game. And it was funny, like yesterday, Paul was like, just never seen a team hit more goalposts than the Buffalo Sabres this year. It's just a little bit of it's puck luck. Kind of like the Bills at times. The Bills are a good team, so it's not necessarily an apples to apples. But, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about really up until this point in the Josh Allen era, there hasn't really been the moment or a group of moments you can look at as, man, the ball bounced right for the Bills. The Bills caught a break a couple of times maybe. And even the breaks are really just like it was an illegal or, Kadarius Toney's lined up offsides. That's not really a break. That was an illegal play. It's not a break. The ball's not bouncing your way. Didn't get lucky.
It's kind of a break that he didn't know where to line up.
Sure.
As a professional?
I think about this, like, the Sabres eventually, maybe don't mark my words, but I feel like eventually will start getting some bounces to go their way. And now, they did on the road trip and the going out west, and for whatever reason, and, you know, I should have maybe asked Paul this, what his thoughts are on this, and, you know, the Sabres seem to, this issue with the Sabres over the last, really, I think since Don Granato's taken over, they struggle a lot at home. They play much better on the road.
That is correct. That is something that is almost, because right before this losing streak happened, they were starting to look like a good team at home. And then all of a sudden, six of these seven games that you've lost, they've been in front of the fans. And it's one of the weirdest things that I will see about this team is that their home record is subpar, and an exasperated fan base is trying to find reasons to go to these games, and they're not going to when you're not winning in front of them. That's a problem, and it's one that I don't know what to attribute it to. Maybe we can, like, even asking Lindy, I don't think he would have an answer for that because it's almost unexplainable. But it's also sometimes how hockey works sometimes. There is the most random of variables in hockey than in all the other major sports. Pucks bounce in very dumb ways. We literally have seen a puck cross the goal line thanks to the butt of Mike Smith.
Or a kick of, who was it?
Hudson Fashing.
Right, which is, of course, very fitting.
Sabres legend, Hudson Fashing.
Yep, correct.
Yep.
Thanks. And as soon as you thought you got rid of, you know, Tim Murray, he strikes back again.
It comes back.
It always comes back. So Sabres tonight, Rangers. We can 803-0550 take your calls on that if you'd like to talk Sabres Rangers. If you'd like to talk about the game on Monday night. If you'd like to talk about, you know, your depression about it. I don't know.
Like my last thing on the Sabres for now. If you wanted to switch gears,
I do.
I know you do. Like you.
Looking forward to switching gears.
Yes, but my last thing here would be this. All throughout the season, I have said they may be average, but I'll be damned if you call them boring. Even in the seven-game losing streak, it has typically been back-and-forth affairs. Or the collapse against Colorado, where you go up 4-0 and then you lose 5-4 in regulation. That one stings even more. But somehow it's, for the outside NHL fan, outside hockey fan, neutral fan, the Sabres are basically eating a bunch of pixie sticks going out on the ice. They're entertaining. Unfortunately for us, hasn't been.
Times. This isn't, I don't want to confuse this team with the 2022 version of them.
No, they're not, but at the same time.
It's not high event hockey.
It's not high event hockey, but they are, when they are on their game, they're one of the more fascinating watches in the National Hockey League.
The problem is they're just not on their game enough.
Well, it's that they've lost seven in a row, too.
That, yes.
In two of those games, you've been shut out.
Yeah.
That will put a little bit of mud on my, I'll be damned if you call them boring.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't find them this year to be, like, they don't demand. Even in 2022, when they were fun and everybody really liked the coach because he had the feel-good vibes and he was kind of the underdog, that was a team that I think was, if nothing else, entertaining. I'm not sure I'm going to label this team that. Like, I think the Lindy vibes that everybody was kind of grasping to, they've worn off. And it's not Lindy's fault that they've worn off. It's just he was brought in to be the vibe change. And unfortunately, it just was a tough start to the season.
It's still only...
This was a tough start to the season.
Oh, yeah. The Europe games was...
It was tough.
They were kind of set up to fail, honestly. Having to play that extra exhibition game, New Jersey was playing preseason games against NHL talent before they flew over. And
yeah, I think we got a little bit of
the Sabres did not face an NHL, even half of an NHL roster, before their NHL group had to go to Europe.
And there was a little bit of a, I think, false sense of security.
Yes.
I know I felt like, oh man, maybe this is, maybe they're going to start hot. This team looks different. They've got a dip. And it, you know, it, the start of the season, obviously the Devils games weren't good. I mean, going four, losing 4-1 and then 3-1 back-to-back games, and then losing 3-1 in your home opener didn't feel great. But then I was at that Panthers game, the fourth game of the year, where, you know, obviously they were missing some, you know, key pieces.
They were missing
in that game.
Barkov and Tkachuk, but you took advantage.
You took advantage.
That's the thing. But really, honestly, throughout the entirety of this season, up until the losing streak, there has been a lot of good hockey from them.
Starting 1-5 and being in the position that they're in right now, which is, again, four games out of a playoff spot.
4 points.
4 points. Sorry, yes.
So only two games.
4 points. 4 points out of a playoff spot. It's, again, I think just part of this, Derek, is not wanting, while I believe, and we'll, again, get a chance to talk to Lindy at 8 o'clock, while I believe the message to this team is going to be like, hey, it's not gone our way. We have not figured this out yet. But we are still right on the just keep pushing through this. Keep finding your way to playing winning hockey. Keep doing the things we're asking you to do so you can be successful. And we're right there. This is not a lost season. It's still December. There's a lot of hockey to play. Even with that, the buy-in is so difficult for these fans. And the fan base, I think, is just looking for something redeemable. A player, a line.
That thing that was redeemable was you came back from the West Coast trip at 11-9-1, looking hot, coming back home for a large stretch here. You were going to play 6 of 7 games in front of the home crowd. Actually, 7 of 8 in front of the home crowd because they're home tonight. You're playing 7 of 8 in front of the fans. You're coming in hot. You just swept the West Coast. That means like you're suddenly at an all-time high here. And all that good faith that they managed to cultivate, it came crashing down. And it happened in front of everyone. If this was all majority on the road, that's one thing. But the crash and burn happened in front of them.
Which it's done many times.
And
before.
As a fan, you might take that personally. And I don't blame them.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm not sure anyone's taking anything the Sabres do particularly personally.
Like they're like,
but,
oh, finally, I bought in again, and you do this again. Like now, I'm starting to think you're spiting me.
And that's the thing too is I'm not sure. It would be interesting to know like actual buy-in. I'm not sure anyone actually buys into these guys.
Ready? It's enough that a caller blamed the fans yesterday.
True.
So
that is true.
Those fans were upset enough to boo them because you're losing in front of us. Again. Why? I'm not a fan of that. Boo.
I'm not a fan of that. Shocked.
But even then, they've had entertaining games within this losing streak. Minnesota, they looked the better team and they got goalied.
Colorado game.
Vancouver.
At home.
Vancouver, you fought back and earned a point. As a matter of fact, that was the one game where I was the most impressed in the losing streak was you stole yourselves a point and had a chance at the second. But then the New York Islanders go ahead and take everything fun and ruin it. And then from there, it just the Colorado game happens. Winnipeg, you manage to get to overtime. Utah, after the palm trees and taxes quote. That's the other part is that presser also happened. That is probably where it is where like you really feel a little bit more different.
There's no doubt it was a tipping point. Yeah. And here we are. So 803-0550 is the number to call. Let's move on from that and let's talk
some
football.
Let's free you up a little bit here.
Let's talk a little football at this point, some positivity, some fun, some exciting. Obviously the matchup this week is one I know that Bills fans maybe aren't I think if the Bills were 10-2, there'd be a little bit more juice right now for the game. Not that I think the juice is down. I just don't think it's as high as it could have been coming into this game. I still think there's a level of excitement the way that Josh Allen obviously played last week. 6 touchdowns, kind of an unbelievable performance. First quarterback or first player in NFL history to have 3 passing touchdowns, 3 rushing touchdowns in one game. And obviously the offense... The offense, and I even said this during the game, people are like, are you crazy? They scored 44 points. The passing game has never looked better this year. I said that at times last week, it felt for the first time that they really missed Dalton Kincaid in their offense. And the reason I say that is there were a couple of drives, especially early in the game, where the game started to get away from the Bills. Where, listen, the defense did not play well. Most teams aren't going to win. Your percentage of victory when you get a blocked punt for a touchdown is very low. But there were opportunities at the end of the first half. There were coming out of the half. They didn't score. They had 2 opportunities to double dip, which is what they've been really good at. They've been fantastic at taking advantage of. They win the toss, defer, using that final possession of the first half to score, coming back in the start of the second half and walking right down the field and scoring as well. And they both of those opportunities could have changed a little bit of the dynamic of the game. You heard, yes, Sean McDermott after the game talk about how he had hoped or wished that they could have got more of a running game going. And the reason why is you want that running game to do what it did for the Rams, which is protect their defense.
Yeah, they're gassed and winded, and you gave them no chance.
Gave them really no chance. And, you know, you can't get the running game going when you're down 17 points, when you're down 14 points.
Yeah, there's
points.
A point of no return.
So
and it was after
it
the
turned
first
into
half.
A shootout. It turned into them having to lean on Josh Allen in the passing game. And now we know, which I'm not sure we knew going into this game, that if the Bills do have to get into a shootout with a very good offense, that they absolutely can go pound for pound with the Chiefs. They can go pound for pound with a team like the Rams. I would assume, and we're going to see, and I think a lot of people are presuming, you're going to have to go pound for pound in a sort of offensive battle against this Detroit team who is experiencing really unprecedented injuries on the defensive side of the ball. I was listening yesterday to Chopin Bulldog when they had Ross Tucker on, talking about how their week one starting defensive lineup too deep. Their top 8 defensive linemen from week one are not in the lineup this week against the Bills. That's an insane amount. They're 3 of their top 4 linebackers, including their leading tackler and defensive captain and play caller, Alex Anzalone, also out. So they are in terms of their front 7, as decimated as any team the Bills are going to face. This would be, I think, an opportunity this week. If there's a game plan that's going to revert more back to running the football, they sprinkled in some screens that I'm not here to tell you I think that the screen game is now all of a sudden going to be a huge piece of their offense moving forward. And by screen game, obviously they're still going to throw those screens over to Khalil Shakir. And if Keon Coleman comes back in the lineup this week, you know, he's a guy too. You want to get the ball in his hands after the catch. They love doing that with Dalton Kincaid as well. But the reason that I was going down this hole about missing Dalton Kincaid is I think there were those, you know, 3rd and 7s, those plays where you need somebody to just get open and a guy that Josh trusts over the middle of the field. To me, outside of just when a team can sort of key on, no pun intended for key on Khalil Shakir, the middle of the field without having Dalton Kincaid in the lineup didn't have as much juice. They were doing more to the boundary at the outside to Amari Cooper and Matt Collins and even Khalil Shakir, who had some big catches at the perimeter. That was the most perimeter-based passing game, downfield-based passing game I've seen from the Bills this year. It's not that they don't take shots down the field. It's just that this offense typically is based around the short and quick passing game, getting the ball to Josh Allen's hands quicker. His average depth of target is as low as it's been in his career. And, I mean, he was pressing the ball down the field accurately. It wasn't forced balls down the field. I mean, that throw to Khalil Shakir where he gets hit at the 1-yard line and then the touchdown to Matt Collins. I mean, those are 2 unbelievable throws from Josh Allen. And what I really liked, too, about, you know, talking about the game plan and talking about the screen specifically, Derek, is that screen that went to Ty Johnson for the touchdown.
Yes.
Was something I was wondering. Now, I presumed that they were going to hit a vertical shot as the build off of that screen pass, the shotgun, quick snap, throw the ball out to Khalil Shakir, and then get your, you know, tackle out in front and let him do his thing. That's been a play this team has run 30 times, yes. 25 times, right? So teams are looking at that as a, this is a tendency when they come to this look, when it's too wide, or when Khalil Shakir is going in motion across the set, you got to watch for that quick screen. The Bills flashed that quick screen. They were all over it. I mean, if that was a design play to Khalil Shakir, the defensive end would have knocked the pass down, and that at best it would have knocked the pass down, could have been intercepted, or at least it was going to fall for an incomplete. They had it really well covered. The screen on the back side of it was not something they had shown on film at all. To me, the build off of that play was to pump that and then have the wide receiver blocking hit that vertical to make it look like you were setting up the screen and then hit the deep shot. That could still be in the playbook too. And I think that's the cool thing about a play like that is you have a ton of different things you can build off of a simple screenplay. A, the base screenplay works really well. B, it's got things you can build off of it. And C, they've only shown that they're going to run a screen out of it one time. So now defenses have to prepare for that play a little differently. I don't think they can go all out to try to stop that play, get their hands in the passing lanes, knowing that if they get to the backside screen, that they're going to be, you know, vulnerable on the back end and having defenders there ready to defend that play. So that play specifically really stood out to me, and I wanted to mark that. But I don't think this team's going to turn into a – they're going to start running, you know, effective running back screens one or two or three times a game. But it was nice to see it finally come to fruition. They've been trying to get that play going. I think they finally got the look they were looking for. And now it's on film. Teams have to prepare for the Bills potentially getting a screen pass kind of dunked in behind them, which they just really haven't been able to show up to this point.
All right, you said a lot, and we got to go to break. So
yes, we do.
I don't know how much I'm going to be able to respond to everything.
Well, we've got another 3.5 hours to talk ball. We've got Rich and Lakeview hanging out on hold. We'll get to you on the other side as well. Again, 8 o'clock, well, I should say 7:30, Joe Marino is our first guest of the morning. That'll come up here in about an hour, so stay tuned for that. And otherwise, I'm Nate Geary. That's Derek Kramer. We're filling in for Jeremy and Joe today. You're listening to WGR.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to pass, Allen over the middle, complete to Shakir. 40, 30, 20, still on his feet, looking for the end zone, and he's going to make it for the touchdown. Khalil Shakir, old reliable, with a 51-yard catch and run to pay dirt.
Chris Brown on the call. That's the Khalil Shakir touchdown. That was a absolute beauty. What a game from Shakir, going over the 100-yard mark for the second time this season. Welcome back, Nate Geary and Derek Kramer filling in for Jeremy and Joe. We're going to go and get connected with our fans, and we're going to go to Rich in Lakeview. Rich, you're on with Nate and Derek. Good morning to you.
Good morning, brothers. You know, you got me all awake first thing in the morning, starting with the Sabres take, and then on to the Bills. Tomorrow looks like kind of a snow day for maybe a huge portion of West New York. So tonight, if you can watch the game, you can do a drinking game. Take a shot of whatever adult beverage you want every time 6'13" Tage Thompson gets knocked on his butt and off his feet. You know, I've never seen a kid, and he falls like one of those marionette puppets. He doesn't fall all at once. It's kind of eventually takes himself out of the play. They go the other way. I mean, you have a guy like Kozak who comes up for two games, bangs it around, makes a difference in limited playing time, and I think they must have talked to somebody in the locker room and said, guys, we get paid a lot of money. You keep playing that way, we're going to have to play after April, and we're the third-string quarterbacks of the NHL. We get a check, we get to wear the uniform and the hat backwards, but listen, let's not get crazy and extend this season for us. So I think it's kind of crazy. And I saw it on the broadcast, it was terrible, like you know, they're talking about how for that tournament or whatever they're having, about how Tage and Tuck got snubbed by Team USA. They got avoided. They didn't get snubbed. What, in that tournament, what do they want to do, blow a two-goal lead against the Shoresy All-Stars, you know, when they play them or whatever they're doing, whatever that tournament is? I don't know. I've reached my roof. And then you got fans calling in, don't boo them. This is what's happening. No offense, guys. when everybody gets a trophy, this what happens. You know, old man yelling at clouds. Let's go to the Bills. People want to talk about it. You made a good point about that, screen pass getting on film. I think there's an even bigger point. Now, Nate, I mean, you're better with statistics than I am, but that two-point non-divisional loss, I think it hurts more with this Detroit game coming up for a couple reasons. Number one, I think if the Bills and Pittsburgh went out and they tie, now Pittsburgh would have a strength of schedule.
That's correct.
The victory, right? Mm-hmm. So slip into third, all right, and there's a bunch of the points there. But again, getting on film, I think Sean McVay just AI'd or did a cheat code of how to decimate the Buffalo Bills. I mean, Buffalo Bills defense, excuse me, Rasul Douglas looked, you know, he was acting like he was the goalie from Slapshot by the time the fourth quarter rolled around. And I know, Nate, you break down film, but, you know, watching Orlovsky, and we were talking about it during the game, about Von Miller. Now, yep. Again, I'm only one sack, I know one quarterback pressure behind Ed Oliver, so I'm looking for my Christmas bonus too. But Von Miller on that. No, I mean, if I can get in, if I can get on the practice squad, I know how they give those guys in the outside. But that last touchdown by the Rams.
Yep.
Now, Miller played for the Rams. Orlovsky says the Rams have been running that screen to touchdown for years.
Mm-hmm.
And how Stafford looks to the left side, waits.
Comes back to the right, yeah.
And gets so did Von never practice against that? Did he not know that was coming? Was there no film that showed, hey, if he gets sucked in, that's a touchdown? And
so,
you know,
let me say this, Rich. And first of all, thanks, because I thought you're making a good point I want to run with. So I appreciate it, Rich. Thanks for the call and getting connected with our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. I like the point about, well, a couple of things. So you talked about Douglas, and there's no question that was Douglas's most difficult game he's played. It was his worst game as a Bill, no doubt. It was also Taron Johnson's maybe worst game as a Bill in coverage. And so I also want to almost even check myself here, because I talked a little bit about after the game, it felt like the Bills really didn't really adjust in the second half. They did in the run game. They stopped the run game. The
they
run game
almost
did not,
sold out.
They sold out for the run game. Which, a little bit. And
almost.
They ran some more man coverage. The problem was they were getting burned in man. And this is
playing man coverage
going
with guys
into
that
this game,
it's not their strongest
going
suit.
Into this game, though, they were number one in EPA per play when they ran man coverage. They were running more man coverage than they traditionally have under Sean McDermott. I think that this matchup will be one of the, if not the most, and I hate doing this every time the Bills lose a game, saying, well, it's not a great matchup for the Bills, because then all of a sudden you're feeling like, okay, well, who is a good matchup? If the power run team and the super pass team are not good matchups for the Bills, who's a good matchup? The reason this wasn't a great matchup is I looked at the two boundary receivers. Puka Nacua is a top seven receiver in football. Cooper Kupp is, I mean, was that? He's not that anymore, but he's still a top 15, top 20 guy. And Puka Nacua made some plays in that game. There were two third down catches that five guys on
they
earth
were,
make.
They were undefendable
just
almost.
They were perfectly defended plays. It was a great throw, even better catch. Like the one on the sidelines over Christian Benford where he toe taps. And the
he
ball's
floats.
I mean, that ball is going into the first row. Like, it was just an unbelievable play, and it was a gut punch. And the problem is, the Bills' defense, they just were not able to find a small win, and they weren't able to stack small wins, right? It'd be, hey, you get a stop on first down, then it's second and you know, seven, third and four, and it just was like they could not really get any momentum going. I'm going to tell you this, the Von Miller point. I thought Von Miller was their most effective pass rusher in the game.
And the problem is that that doesn't say much, and even statistically, Ed Oliver was an effective pass rusher on that one. He had two quarterback hits. Von Miller had the only other one. So it was a tough game all around for the defensive line. Almost abysmal being the right word here for it. The other thing is that how many teams are going to have that matchup on the outside? Joe brought this up on Monday, and I want to help hammer it home for him since he can't right now. Hope you feel better, Joe. Feel better soon, Joe. How many teams are going to have that matchup for you in the postseason?
You talk about the receivers?
Yes. I'll tell you right now, none of them are in the AFC.
I was going to say, yeah, they're not in the AFC.
So it'd be the Super Bowl if you get there.
Potentially, yep.
That'd be the only way you see that matchup again.
Yeah, I agree. And even like the team I'm thinking of is Philly.
Yeah.
And Philly doesn't really run the screens.
And,
like,
and Stafford is better than Hurts.
Oh, I mean, as a passer. A lot better than Hurts as a passer. Here's what I'll say, right? Like, on the screenplay, first of all, there was an offsides penalty, a hold, and an offensive pass interference in one play, and none of them were called. So, in reality...
Nope, two plays.
Oh, I'm sorry, in back-to-back plays.
Yes, back-to-back plays.
I look at this game, and the thing I found most frustrating was it was very clear what the game plan was early. It was get the ball out of Matt Stafford's hand quick. So even if you really were able to generate pressure, there were very few instances that you would have been able to really affect Matt Stafford when he's throwing the ball, because the ball was coming out so quick. The problem was the game plan very clearly was let's get the ball out of his hands quick, get the ball to Puka Nacua and let him operate. Let it get him in the short game, turn around, hand him the ball and jet sweeps. And it was so passive that it felt like they knew Puka Nacua was going to get the ball and there was nothing they could do about it. That's the first time, other than maybe the Jonathan Taylor, maybe going back to that, 2018, the Saints game where Kamara and Mark Ingram, just like you, just every time they touch the ball, you're like, yeah, there's nothing they can do to stop this. It did feel like at times that was what the Bills were dealing with Puka Nacua. And that's not a elite level offensive line like they're going to face this week against the Detroit Lions. This is the best offensive line in football. And if you can't generate pressure against this quarterback, I've been long been, especially on this program, a Jared Goff defender, a truther of sorts. I've always thought that Jared Goff, especially over the last couple of seasons, was a good enough quarterback to get you and win you a Super Bowl. He's already gotten you to one. Mm-hmm. And I think he absolutely can win one with this Detroit team. When he isn't pressured, he can be one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league. I mean, he went like a three-game stretch where he completed like 85 to 90% of his passes. He went a full game where he did not have any completion.
Yeah.
If you do not generate pressure, if you do not get your hands in passing lanes, if you allow Amon-Ra St. Brown free releases.
Even Jameson Williams.
In Jameson Williams, I'm not too worried about Jameson Williams from the fact that I don't believe this defense is the only time they've given up a big play is when they had Cole Bishop in. Mm-hmm. Against Houston.
Right.
This is not a defense I'm worried about getting beat over the top necessarily.
They would have if not for the double PI call.
That's a good point. That's also, I'll give you that. That's a good point. But generally speaking, this defense is, the rule of this defense is we're not going to get beat deep. We're going to keep everything in front of us. The problem and the issue with me is this is like a very movable object in a very movable force, if that makes sense. And I think I just made that saying up, right? Like,
well, it's the opposite of the usual saying.
This is the defense that is 26th in yards per attempt given up against an offense that has the best duo of running backs maybe in NFL history. They're one of the only two duo of running backs ever to each have double-digit touchdowns. This group gives you the thunder and lightning, the fire and ice. They can be downhill. And even Jahmyr Gibbs can be a physical downhill runner too. If I'm the Detroit Lions, my game plan, if I were to give you like what my... like. Format or formula for victory would be is Jared Goff throws the ball 19 times, 20 times, and we turn around and hand the ball off 45 times, 50 times, and each of my running backs get 15, 17 carries each, because I don't think the Bills can stop me. I don't think they're big enough. I don't think that their defensive line is built to defend two gaps at a time, which makes it really difficult, I think, for this defense when they've got a bunch of one-gap defenders, and it allows these offensive linemen to get to the second level a lot easier, unencumbered, and it gets hands on these linebackers. The linebackers struggled last week because I think the Rams got to the second level a whole bunch.
The other thing here is if you're looking for a game to take away of a little bit of a blueprint how to beat them, it's almost like the anomaly, though, too. Houston didn't beat them, but they made things tough on them because Jared Goff was making mistakes. You do need to create some sort of way to get those turnovers, because we saw it with the Bills defense. They are typically an opportunistic group. that will bend but don't break when it comes to like the end zone. We saw last week when they are not getting those opportunities, not even missing them, not getting them at all. We saw what could be the worst we've ever seen the Bills defense look like.
We saw their floor. But I think we know that...
It's got a giant hole in it.
This is a defense that... I said the same thing earlier this season about the offense, is that at their ceiling, this is a very good offense, even without, you know, Diggs and Davis and you know, whatever else. At its floor, you know, I'm thinking of the Houston game. I'm thinking of the Ravens game. Obviously, not having Khalil Shakir for that Ravens game was huge. All of the Houston game, a lot of the second half of the Ravens game was huge. And now they have Amari Cooper. So I think the addition of Amari Cooper, as good as he can be, as much as he potentially raises their ceiling, I think the more dramatic shift for them is he raises their floor.
Yes.
Did the ceiling raise a little bit in the offense? It did. I would say marginally was raised. I think it was, not dramatically, but I think it was significantly raised, the floor was, when they acquired Amari Cooper. 803-0550 is the number to call. We'll get your thoughts in on this Bills-Lions matchup. Is there a matchup, a positional matchup you're looking at? Concerns? What you think the best opportunity is to stop this run game? We'll talk to Joe Marino at 7:30, get his thoughts. What is the game plan here? How do you bounce back defensively off of that performance on a week where you've got a team that's got the long week? I mean, they've got an extra 3 or 4 days. They played on Thursday Night Football last week. So they've got more preparation time, and they've got more opportunity to watch what the Bills did and how to continue to go after this Bills defense, which right now is feeling a little like it's reeling. 803-0550, Nate Geary, Derek Kramer filling in for Jeremy and Joe. This is WGR.
We just talked about maybe getting turnovers against the Lions. That might be a helpful thing. What are turnovers? Interceptions. Let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills. Enter now at WGR550.com for a chance to win $1,200 toward your home heating costs. Don't fumble this opportunity. Contest ends January 5th, 2025. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence. Powering tomorrow, comforting today.
All right, welcome back. Good morning to you. Hour two,
about to be dropping. Joe Marino, 7:30.
That's right.
As they usually talk with Jeremy and Joe every week, and this time he's going to have to talk to us. So, Joe, I am sorry for the impending headache for any of my questions.
I was on with Joe Marino during the bye week. We do a kind of a yearly, I think it's tradition at this point. I don't know how many times it takes in order for something to become a tradition, but I think we're on like year four of doing this. So I did the bye week episode with Joe, which I love doing. And you know, like, I love Lockdown Bills. I'm a big fan. And I'm a big fan of Joe's work in general. But, you know, one of the things we talked about in that was like the excitement around Matt Milano and, you know, his return and kind of how it felt like it was basically like a mid-season free agent acquisition that of an elite player that you know knows your system. And, you know, I'll be interested to kind of hear his thoughts at 7:30 about, you know, it's not been the easiest of, you know, starts for him. He's two games. He's basically, he played 77% of the snaps in his first game against San Francisco at home. I don't know the exact snap count, but he basically played the entire game against the Rams. And, you know, he doesn't look like Matt Milano yet.
And I said it yesterday. This is effectively his de facto preseason. Getting restarted, reset, and with live snaps. So it's going to be a bit of an adjustment, it looks like. And I'm not panicking yet. If we talk about he's struggling against like the Jets or the Patriots, then, you know, then I'll start being like, hey, is everything all right? Is this a question we have to ask? I don't want to ask that question. I'm good on that.
803-0550, 7 o'clock hour again, coming up here next, Joe Marino, 7:30. Then we'll have Lindy Ruff at 8. So we've got a jam-packed hour coming up for you next. I'm Nate Geary. That's Derek Kramer filling in for Jeremy and Joe. This is WGR.